Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Eli James here with another installment of Christogenia, or actually Christogenos, and we're going to be continuing our discussion of Two Seed Line. I believe it's part 14. There's been so much excitement here, I forgot to look it up, but I think it's part 14. And Bill Fink is actually running the show this evening because I can't access the show on my computer. And so our ongoing technical difficulties continue. First, I want to quickly say that today is the day of the Great Abomination. The date in 1948, May 15th, when that Great Abomination, the Israeli state, Itzalai, the Zionist occupation government of Palestine, by a bunch of Khazars who don't have a single drop of Shemitic blood in their veins, pretending to be Israel and pretending to be Judah, invaded and stole that country away from its rightful owners, the Palestinian people. So today is the day of infamy. It is a day of infamy, folks, and everybody on the planet should be in mourning. I have a quote here from some Palestinians here. They say, mark the Nakba, or catastrophe, on May 15th, the day after the British colonial era over Palestine ended in 1948. And there's a picture here of a Palestinian lady holding up a key, and she says, this key represents, I came here to show that we believe that one day we will return, if not me, then my son. The wooden keys symbolize those homes from which they fled in 1948 and took part in a rally. So these keys, obviously, of their homes, which are stolen from them by the Jews, they are holding these keys as memorials of the day that those homes were stolen from them, and they symbolize the day that they will eventually return to Palestine and reclaim their true land, because it doesn't belong to the Jews, who are not Shemites, who are not Israelites, who are not even Hebrews. They are, in fact, Canaanites, as we have been explaining in these several programs. Do you have any comment on this, Bill, before we get into the theme?
Well, there's, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Canaanites on both sides of the fence.
That's right.
But on, in this case, it's the Jews who were the more evil Canaanites.
Right, they're definitely the aggressors.
It's no doubt that the Palestinians, I mean, don't get me wrong, the Islamic conquest of Europe went on for quite some time, for
mm-hmm.
hundreds of years.
And it's going on today.
Right, and they will conquer us as soon as they get the upper hand. And they're not our allies, and I'll never accept them as that.
Yes.
However,
yes.
The Jews, on the other hand, have used this state of Israeli, this false state that they've set up, not only to oppress their Canaanite cousin Palestinians, but also
mm-hmm.
to extort the Western Christian world.
That's right. Absolutely. No,
it's a huge extortion racket for these Jews.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just pulled up a recent DNA study to prove to a Jew who was challenging my Anglo-Saxon Israel position, and I pulled up a DNA study from a Jewish website, and on that DNA study it said that the Palestinian people and other Arab people in the Middle East are very similar in DNA to the Jewish people, okay?
Right, because they all have that Canaanite blood, that Canaanite Edomite blood. They
right,
all have it.
Yeah, they're all basically the same DNA, except the Jews practice a different religion.
And very interestingly, there's Clifton Emmerheiser has a website, has an article on his website, which proves that Jews and Mexicans share certain cancer genes
uh-huh.
and certain other genes that are exclusive to them.
Yes,
and
yes.
And that it's actually because a lot of the so-called Mexicans are actually Jews who fled the Inquisition.
Okay.
And bought passage with
right.
the Spanish conquistadors and,
right.
and settled all over South and Central America.
And there were Jews on board the ship that Columbus sailed too.
Right. And I had a letter once. I don't have it now, but it's in a book somewhere. It's from the Bishop of Havana.
Okay.
And it's written back to the King of Spain. And it's begging him not to send any more Jews to Havana, or else he's in danger of losing Cuba as as a Christian, as
right.
a Christian country.
Right. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And yeah, there has never been a nation that has prospered with the presence of the Jews. Quite the contrary. Every nation on record has been prosperous up until the Jews invaded that country.
Well, there's never been a human being who's prospered with a stomach full of tapeworm.
Right, exactly.
I mean, the parasites infest the cadaver, and they suck it dry from the inside out.
That's right, and people have to understand that the Jews are a race of parasites. They have never created a nation of their own. They have never built a city of their own. They have always stolen them, and after successfully stealing them, they typically drive them into the ground, not just cities, but nation states and nations, and as we're seeing today, the entire world is being driven into the ground by these parasitic people.
Right. It just makes you wonder, where could all the money be going?
That's right.
Where could they possibly be keeping it?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Where is all the money that, you know, $6 billion a year just from America alone? And that's a low estimate, folks. And then they're extorting money from the Germans and from the British and from other countries. We're talking billions of dollars per year to keep that country afloat. And they can't even keep their people in their own homes. They have a homeless problem.
Right, but the Jews as a people, they have a huge stake in Palestine right now. And that's because they have actually stolen a great amount of our technology.
Oh, yes.
And they have all these high-tech, software companies, silicon chip companies, printed circuit integration companies, all the highest technology companies. They have branches opening in Palestine so that they could funnel the technology to West into their own coffers.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and so today must be
biotech, the whole thing.
Right, and they've been stealing military secrets from our nation. You know, they have one spy after another. Jonathan Powell is just one. The Rosenbergs are another. And spy after spy after Jewish spy.
Oh, but that's okay. They're our friends. They're the 51st state.
Yeah, but they've been selling this stuff to China.
They're
going to
be converted to Christianity any moment now.
Yeah, but they've been selling this stuff to China, and look what's happening. You know,
yes,
our economy is declining, and theirs is building up, and they're buying brass for bullet casings is what they're buying it for.
Yep.
And so the Jews have been propping up our worst enemy, but they're actually our worst enemy to begin with. And then now they're propping up an even bigger enemy called Communist China. And all the promises made from the 70s on, when Nixon first went to China and opened the doors to trade with the Communist slave state. And I remember the day very well because my mother was, she adored Nixon because she was a real Republican. You know, she hated the Democrats. And I told her, Ma, I know how much you love Nixon, but what he's doing here is wrong. He is opening up the floodgates to trade with China, and it's not going to make China a democratic state. It's going to remain a slave state. It's just the corporation's way of exploiting slave labor in China, and that's all it is.
Well, of course, and it's never been profitable for the House of Rothschild and their arms dealers and their bankers, their bond creators and all of those people who create this phony capital so that nations can build up armaments and defenses and huge
right.
standing armies. It's never been profitable for them to have one dominant power.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to build up China to pit China against America.
Right.
They need the other superpower. They need another a bogeyman in the world like they had the USSR for 50 years. And this whole phony
right.
Cold War,
right.
and they cashed in with zillions of dollars on this
right.
Cold War.
Yes, yes. And then even the Jewish companies like the Freibergs, I forget the name of their actual company. I don't think it's Archer Daniels Midland, but it's a food distribution company where they got the contract during the height of the Cold War to deliver American surplus wheat to the Soviet Union. In the 60s and 70s, don't you know? So the Jews always get a cut, you know. So they're both on the capitalist side and on the communist side, and they're the ones who make the profit from the transfer.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Just like they make the profits from the transfer of our bonds to China every day.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, anybody who believes that Jews are God's chosen people is simply deluded. As Paul prophesied in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, Yahweh will send a strong delusion to all those people who reject the truth. And so that's what's happening. All the Judaic Christians in the world, and all the liberals in the world too, are totally deluded. And they actually believe that world peace is just around the corner.
Well, right, but there's a lot of Christians and a lot of Christian conservatives or Republicans in the world that are just as deluded.
That's true.
And anybody caught up in the two-party paradigm and our party's better than their party and we're conservative and they're liberal and we're this and we're that, they're just as deluded.
Right, because Rush Limbaugh worships the toilet that Ariel Sharon sits on.
Absolutely.
I pronounced that right, correctly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That one West Coast talk show host, he's a Jew. He's a phony conservative, too.
Michael Savage.
Savage, yeah.
I believe that Savage is an acronym. It stands for Satan's Authorized Voice as Good Entertainment.
That's right. That's right. And that's all it is. It's good entertainment for those who believe it. Believe, take it seriously. If you know that it's phony, it's disgusting. You know, it's totally disgusting. Yeah.
Right. And creatures like Savage are promoted to exist. They're allowed to exist, and they're pumped up by the enemy because they keep, even though Savage actually has, like 95% of the conservative argument, he has correct.
Mm-hmm.
The constructionist conservative argument.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's a Zionist.
A Zionist, right.
So
absolutely.
He keeps all of the country, well, not all of them, but a great number of the country's constructionist conservatives, he keeps in the Israeli camp.
That's right. That's right. And
he actually, if you listen to him, he actually equates what they call anti-Semitism, which is anti-Antichristism.
Right.
They equate that to anti-Americanism.
That's right.
If you don't like the Antichrist, you're not a real American.
Yeah, as if somehow Judaism defines what America is.
Right.
Or the Israeli state defines what America
right.
is.
Right. So Savage, even though he sounds good on the surface, when you scratch him, he's just another devil, and he's a much more evil devil than the Chuck Schumers of the world.
Exactly. I believe it was Schopenhauer who said that when the Jews want to destroy a movement, an intellectual movement, what they do is they create and finance their own version of that movement and then drive the true movement underground due to lack of financing and lack of publicity. And that's what they've done with so-called conservatives, neocons. What's a neocon?
Well, actually, the definition, the proper understanding of a neocon is not a new conservative.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what they are. They are old socialist Marxist hippies.
That's right.
Who are new to conservatism.
Yeah, and I know.
They're socialists. They're Bolsheviks in capitalist clothing.
That's right. I know exactly what you're talking about because Leo Strauss, Professor Leo Strauss of the University of Chicago, old Marxist, was the one who devised this plan for these Marxists, these wealthy Marxists, wealthy Jewish Marxists, to begin pretending to be conservatives, infiltrate the Republican Party, and turn it into another Zionist party, just like the Democratic Party has been since 1913.
Right, and that's exactly what they did. And George Bush, this last president, was surrounded with his entire cabinet was filled with neocons.
Yeah, and so is this. So is Obama's cabinet. They're like cockroaches in
the cabinet. Well, this cabinet's filled with Jews, but they're the straight Marxist Bolshevik Jews.
That's right, right. But you know,
they're wolves in wolves' clothing.
Yeah, but the Democrats have always been Marxists too. So now both parties are in fact Judeo-Marxist parties, and the average American simply does not understand this. Okay.
No.
And this is the reality, folks. What we're telling you is the truth because, you know, just listen to the nightly news. They're not giving you the truth about the economy. They're still pretending that everything's just fine. And the recovery, they're always talking about the recovery. There is no recovery for this, folks. It's the end. It's the end times. All right, very good. So let's get back into our two seed line discussion. And I was very interested in the discussion that you had with Clifton Emmaheiser last Friday, I believe. It was either Friday or Saturday. But
last Friday.
Okay. And I was always confused about Clifton Emmaheiser's point of view, because I took him to be at least conversant with Willie Martin on the subject of the Che Beast in Genesis 1:24 and 1:25. Okay, and let me just read here where how this word Che is used in various parts of Scripture. What kind of a beast do you know that wears clothing, sackcloth, as we read in Jonah 3:8? What kind of a beast has hands, as reported in Exodus 19:13? What type of beast is capable of mixing or sowing his seed with the seed of Adam, as described in Jeremiah 31:27? What kind of a male beast could a woman lust after and lie down with, and cause Yahweh to have them executed in righteous judgment, Leviticus 20:16. What kind of a female beast could a man lust after and cause a penalty of death to be decreed by Yahweh, Leviticus 20:15. What kind of beast would have the ability to keep the vineyard, as we find in the Song of Solomon, chapter 1. What kind of a beast cries mightily unto Yahweh, Jonah 3:8-10. Etc., etc., and then it takes us into the New Testament, okay? What kind of a beast would have eyes full of adultery, as recorded in 2 Peter 2, 12-14, and what kind of a beast loves to riot in the daytime?
Well, right, and I understand all of that, but that, and my response to all of that is that that doesn't assure us that the non-Adamic people, as they exist now, are the beasts of the fifth-day creation.
Right. Well, the point that I'm making here is that Genesis 1:24 and 25, since we're talking about the Che people there, is the word Che is a very broad word referring to life on earth, okay? And it includes these featherless bipeds, all right? And this is what the interpreters of King James Version failed to grasp by translating it as beast, okay? It actually includes humanoids, and there's no doubt that it includes humanoids.
Right, but what I'm saying is that the bipeds that are here today that are non-Adamic.
Right, right.
There's no assurance that they are the actual form of any biped that may have been created prior to Adam.
Okay, well, I mean,
that they're not mixed, in other words.
Well, the whole point of this is to demonstrate that in Genesis chapter 2, that the Adamites were not the only race of people on the planet. You know,
well, absolutely. And there's beasts, two-legged beasts that have cognitive abilities, hands that are actually what we would term people today,
right?
Who were throughout the Bible, and well, they're called beasts.
Yeah,
and they are beasts.
Right, right. And so I actually make a distinction, and several people have called me on this, because the word human actually is composed of two words: hue, meaning colored, and man, meaning a standing upright, two-legged person. Okay.
Right, but If Clifton errs on this, he errs on the side of caution.
Okay.
If indeed he's in error on this,
yeah.
And Genesis 1:25 does insist that Yahweh created a two-legged beast, Clifton is on the side of caution, because we don't want anybody falling into the error of believing that any of these two-legged beasts we have today are good.
Right.
And if Yahweh created them and they're good, then we could intermix with them.
Yeah,
and,
no.
And that is the most severest of evils.
Right, absolutely. There's no doubt about that, because that's what this whole series, it talks about the fact that our race, the Adamic race, must remain separated from the other races. Otherwise, all sorts of curses fall upon us, okay?
Right, and Clifton's point is that there's sheep and there's goats and there's no third alternative.
Right, right. Well, let me just quote, go back to verses 25 and 26. And now here's where the word Adam, or Adam, is actually, verse 26 is where the word Adam first appears, okay? And God said, let us make man, Adam, in our image, after our likeness, and let them, that is the Adamites, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. And so God created Adam, the Adamites, in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. So only the Adamites were created in the image of God. None of these other creatures were. Okay? And what does the word Adam mean? To show blood in the face.
Right. That's absolutely the creation of the white man here on this planet.
Right. And so previously in these other verses 24 through 25, we find that the Che people, among which all of the other featherless bipeds are included, are already here on the face of the earth. So anyone who says that only these two people, Adam and Eve, were on the face of the earth, plus Nachash, or the snake, because some people actually interpret the word Nachash to be a literal snake, okay? Here, this word study of the word Che proves that the non-Adamic featherless bipeds were already on the earth along with the Adamites, okay? And so from my interpretation, whether or not Genesis 2 is a recapitulation of Genesis 1 is not important, because these other races are already here, and then by the time we get to Genesis 2, we're dealing with the individual man, Adam, the individual person, Adam, you know, someone who was selected from among the Adamites in Genesis 1, 26, 27, and 28, okay? That's my interpretation, and it doesn't require either the recapitulation hypothesis or, anything else to exclude other races, because they're already excluded.
Well, okay. Right. And it's obvious from Scripture that the fallen angels were already here on the earth when Adam was created.
That's
because
right.
The tree which had experience in both good and evil was already in the midst of the garden.
Yes.
And it's all conjecture, because we're all only trying to interpret Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any books that you don't have.
Right.
It's obvious to me that the mixing and the rebellion of those fallen angels continued before the Adamic race was here.
That's right. That's right. And in my interpretation, that's what the white race had to deal with previous to Genesis chapter 2, okay? But only the Adamites who show blood in the face were given dominion, okay? So that's already establishing the white race as the race that was supposed to take dominion over the planet, okay? Now, apparently that didn't work, and so Yahweh had to pick a specific Adamite from among the what I call the Cro-Magnon, who are the Adamites who existed up until the day that Adam the man was formed or changed in his DNA.
Well, it could be possible also that they actually are the fallen angels.
That's possible, too. But the way I read history, according to Plato, he said that the nation of Atlantis was a very prosperous nation until they started race mixing. Okay? So in other words, there was no problem until race mixing began, and that the whole planet was chastised by an asteroid that struck the planet in the year 10,500 BC. Okay? Now, interestingly, we have the Kennewick Man, who was recently discovered in Washington State.
I think Kennewick Man, if Kennewick Man is a Caucasoid,
mm-hmm.
then he's a marginal Caucasoid.
Well, the
I've seen the skull, and it has heavy orbits and a sloped forehead.
Okay.
It's not American Indian. I know that.
Right,
it's not
right.
Mongoloid. It's clearly not Mongoloid.
Right. Well, the guy who discovered it, the archaeologist who first discovered it, assumed that it was a Caucasian, possibly 100 years old when he first saw the skeleton, okay? When he had it analyzed and all of the dating techniques said that it was 10,000 years old, he was utterly flabbergasted, okay?
Right, but we do have some marginal Caucasians amongst us who have large orbits and sloped foreheads.
Yeah, it might have been a slightly mixed race, Caucasoid, et cetera, but there's simply no doubt that the white race, from skeletal evidence going back thousands of years, has been on this planet for way past 6,000 B.C. or 7,000 B.C., when the Genesis story, at least the Genesis story of chapter 2, is presented to us, okay? That's when because it says that there was no man to till the earth. That's when the Adamic race became farmers, agriculturalists, and that enabled society and civilization to flourish. Until
my viewpoint is that the so-called fallen angels certainly would have been like us. Because the angels all throughout the Old Testament, when they appear to man, are like us.
Okay.
I mean, they're indistinguishable. When Job invited these men into his house, they weren't distinguishable from
right.
anybody
right.
that Job was accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, according to the legends, they all talk about, you know, like the clash of the Titans. And, you know, my point of view is this, that only the white race has ever built a true civilization. Okay? And then all the civilizations on the planet have been destroyed by the Nakash people. Okay?
Well, that's absolutely true. And all the other races, the aliens who inhabit the area around the Isthmus of Panama now, they didn't build any of those relics that are down in South America and
right.
Central America.
Yeah, they were built.
They live around them, and they know they didn't build them.
Right,
and they
were
can't
built by the bearded white
they
men. yeah.
They haven't built anything since. And the people of the Indian subcontinent and the people of China, they don't build civilization. They only have giant cesspool-like Hoovervilles.
Well, the best
shack
best,
cities.
Yeah.
That's all they've built.
Yeah, the best they've ever done really is some form of monarchy. Okay, they've never achieved any kind of Republican, bill of rights or anything like that among themselves. You know, only the white race has ever achieved anything like that. You know?
Right, absolutely. And the other races that have things now only have them because of the wonders of the Western Christian educational systems.
Right, right.
We were able to train some of them as engineers
and
supply them with what they needed, the tools they needed to mimic our own invention.
Yeah, and that, too, the Jews have provided them with. Even that. Yeah.
Well, right, Jewish capital.
That's right.
Which they love to do that.
Yeah, because as you said earlier, they always have to pit one nation against another. And they did the same thing to the British Empire. It was the Sassoons, the Jews, who fomented the Boxer Rebellion by, you know, hooking all of these Chinamen on dope. Okay, so the Chinese have a serious, legitimate gripe against the British Empire, but nobody understands that it was the Jewish Sassoon family that was profiting the most from all of that. You know?
Well, right, and we sent warships into Chinese harbors so that the Jews could have the right to sell dope to the Chinese people.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. In fact, the Prescott family, related to the Bush, Prescott Bush, was related to the Prescott family, and it was a Prescott family that was involved with the Sassoons in the opium traffic in China.
Well, the Forbes family also founded their wealth on the opium wars.
And so, of course, this is not in the history books because, as you've been taught, there's no conspiracy. The Jews aren't trying to take over the world. And so just forget about it. Don't dig into these facts. Just forget about these facts and pretend that they don't exist. Okay? All right. So, the basic difference, you know, I have with Clifton on this score is I consider the Che people of Genesis 24 and 25 to be pre-existing non-Adamic races, okay? Non-Adamic races. And then those people in 25 through 28 are the Adamites.
Well, okay? your difference with Clifton I can boil down to being that you believe that there were two-legged beasts amongst the beast creation of Yahweh.
That's right. That's
now,
right.
Clifton would say no. However, I'm sure that Clifton would agree that there were two-legged beasts on the planet when Adam was put here.
Right.
And that's because of the fallen angels and their rebellion and their genetic experiments and the things that they did to create hybrids.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So the bottom line is, from either point of view, that when Adam and Eve were confronted by Nahash, it was not just simply three people on the planet, as the Jews and Judeo-Christians interpret this whole scenario, and that somehow the rest of the human race, all the other races, came from the womb of Eve. That's what these people literally believe.
Right, that's absolutely absurd.
Yes.
The first Eve was white. The first Eve was not Anthropus Africanus or whatever they call
exactly.
Lucy. And it's been demonstrated that Lucy is really a monkey.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So in either scenario, the fact remains that the other races were already here. And then, because they always ask the question, well, where did Cain get his wife when he went to the land of Nod? Because she was one of those other races. That's why. Very simple. Okay. And, you know, simple questions like that that the Judeo-Christians don't have any answers for are answered by Christian identity, folks, because we know that, number one, the Bible doesn't lie, and number two, Yahweh is the author of both natural history and the Bible, okay? And so the two must agree. We must find a way to make these forms agree, and what we've been told, what the drivel we've been given over the last couple of hundred years is the false dichotomy between the fable of evolution, okay, and the false belief that all the races came from Adam and Eve. That's utter nonsense. It's absolute utter nonsense.
Right. The mainstream offers people two distinct sets of nonsense.
The Republicans and the Democrats.
And right. And people sign up for one or the other and root for it for their side like they root for a baseball team.
That's right. That's right. And it never occurs to anybody, well, maybe there's a third alternative. Maybe the truth lies somewhere in the middle. Okay. But, you know, if you talk to a Judeo-Christian minister and ask questions like that, they will simply tell you to shut up or leave the denomination. Okay. And they will never address the issues. Okay.
Well, that's what a cult is.
That's right.
Believe me or drink the Kool-Aid.
That's right. Exactly. But on your way out, throw some shekels in the basket. So what we're dealing with here is we have to overcome this false dichotomy that's been presented to us by the Jewish mindset, because I guarantee you that evolution is promoted by Jews, and also this false idea that all races came from Adam and Eve is also promoted by the Jews. So, you know, the truth, you can never believe the Jews in just about anything. You know, if they tell the truth, it's only to hook you to a lie later on down the line, okay? All right, so let's get back to where did we leave off now?
I think I might be wrong, but I think that we left off in Genesis 17.
Okay.
And we last related Genesis 17, 1 to 10. To Luke 2, to a proper translation of Luke 2, 30 and 31, mm-hmm. and Acts 9, 15, to show that Luke and Paul were both teaching the fulfillment of the promises to Abraham
right.
in the message to the nations which descended from Abraham mm-hmm. of the gospel.
Okay.
And then we discussed Genesis 17, 20 and 21, which and recognized the distinction made between Isaac and Ishmael, which is still upheld in the NT, in the New Testament.
That's right.
For instance, by Paul in Galatians chapter 4. And while Ishmael was indeed circumcised, his being put away or put off from Isaac clearly demonstrates that the promise is strictly through genetics, and it's not through ritual, and it's not through any cult initiation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The That's promise comes true. Down to us through our genes.
Right. And so Paul is affirming the verses in Genesis 17, 20, and 21, which I will quote. In fact, let me go back to 19 so everybody understands what we're talking about. And God said, Sarah, your wife shall bear you a son indeed, and you shall call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant. Now, I don't know what these churchians don't understand by the word of everlasting.
Well, that's more than six letters. So
right. And with his seed. Now, that's a four-letter word, Bill. Which means offspring, folks.
Well, that's actually a six-letter word in Greek.
Yeah, okay. And as for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I have blessed him, and will make him fruitful and will multiply him exceedingly, which is not true of the Jews, folks. 12 princes shall he father, and I will make him a great nation. However, my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear to you at this set time in the next year. So, the Ishmael, the descendants of Ishmael, all 12 nations of them, are not part of the covenant people. Only the descendants of Isaac, who is from both Abraham and Sarah, will be the covenant people. Can it be any clearer than that, Bill?
It can't be clearer than that. And it's in the New Testament and it's in the Old Testament.
Right.
Because both Testaments are the same, and they're to the same people.
Yes. Yes.
Just like Jeremiah 31:31 tells us, both covenants are for the same group of people.
Mm-hmm.
There's no replacement theology. It fails.
Right.
The litmus test of Scripture.
Judaism is in fact the original replacement theology, because
right.
they teach that the Bible is about them when they're not even Shemites, Hebrews, or Israelites.
And we have Ignatius, the second century bishop in, I think he was the bishop of Macedonia or the bishop of Sparta, I forget, but he wrote an epistle to the Magnesians and blatantly said that Judaism was a corruption
mm-hmm.
of Christianity.
That's right.
Christianity is not a sect of Judaism.
That's right. That's right. Judaism, as Jesus told the scribes and Pharisees, if you had believed me, if you had believed Moses, you would believe me.
Right.
Well, he wrote of me.
And Judaism is a corruption of Christianity, because Christianity, Hebrewism, is Christianity before Christ.
That's right. That's right. And therefore, Christianity is actually Hebrewism sans the sacrifices. Period.
Right. Absolutely.
That's
Hebrewism without the sacrifices, because Yahshua Christ was our sacrifice.
Now, the Jews still want to maintain the sacrifices. And they have created an entirely different set of law, which has no relationship whatsoever to the law of Moses, and that's called the Talmud.
They've actually been maintaining sacrifices all along. They sacrifice white babies around the Passover every year.
That's right, and I know they sacrifice chickens, too. They never stop sacrificing chickens.
I actually have pictures of Jews sacrificing chickens somewhere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I don't read anything about chicken sacrifices in the Old Testament.
Right. Chickens are cheap.
They're cheaper than doves, I guess. Right. Doves are expensive.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, you can get them at the Jewish deli. Okay, where do you want to go from here?
Well, we have Genesis 18, 9, and 15.
Okay.
And I would just like to continue going through the promises to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob until we get to Genesis 49 to affirm all of that.
Right.
And to show that this is to a family and their continuous offspring and to nobody else.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
And, well, I'll read from Genesis 18:9, and they said unto him, where is Sarah thy wife? And he, meaning Abraham, said, behold, in a tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women.
Okay, she went into menopause. Yes.
Right. She's not ovulating anymore.
Right.
Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, meaning Abraham, being old also?
Mm-hmm.
And Yahweh said unto Abraham, wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I of surety bear a son, which am old?
Mm-hmm.
Is anything too hard for Yahweh,
mm-hmm.
at the time appointed I will return unto thee, according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son?
Mm-hmm.
Then Sarah denied, saying, I laughed not, for she was afraid.
Yes.
And he said, nay, but you did laugh.
Yeah.
And
he laughed at Yahweh.
Right. And it's so important for the promises of Yahweh to be carried down through chosen lineage,
mm-hmm.
that a 90-year-old woman should suffer conception and delivery of a child.
Right.
That's an incredible thing.
That's right.
But that is how important it is that the promise go to the appointed offspring,
through
to the appointed
Sarah.
Race of people.
That's right. That's right.
And that can't be, there's no way that could actually actually be denied.
Right.
The church can say, oh, well, that's different now.
Right. No, yeah, none of this has been changed. So we have totally established that the New Testament excludes the Ishmaelites from the covenant, okay? Deuteronomy 7 and hundreds of passages in the Old Testament tell us that the Canaanites, we should not make any covenant with them. We should have nothing to do with them. And when we had our chance to exterminate them, we failed. And therefore, they will be pricks in our eyes and thorns in our sides. Okay? All of these prophecies have come to pass. Now, if everybody's saved, how come the Jews are still pricks in our eyes and thorns in our sides? How long are we supposed to wait before they somehow get a new spirit within them and find redemption and repentance and all that? They haven't demonstrated that in 6,000 years.
Well, that's the idea. You see, thorns in our sides and pricks in our eyes cause blindness.
That's right. Irritation, like a parasite. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Where do you want to go next?
Genesis 21,
okay.
1 to 13. And we really probably don't have to read the entire thing, but I'll read from verse 9.
Okay.
And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son. Now, this is what Paul quotes in Galatians chapter 4,
okay.
And Paul explains to us that this still stands.
Yes.
For the son of this bondwoman shall not be the heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing, now this is key here, and the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son.
Mm-hmm.
And Yahweh said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in my sight because of the lad, and because of thy bondwoman, in all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called,
right.
And also the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed.
Mm-hmm.
However, if Abraham couldn't, he was grieved at the loss of his oldest son,
right.
And if he could not convince Yahweh to let his son into this covenant,
mm-hmm.
Who the hell is the Catholic Church or anybody else to
right.
convince Yahweh to let anybody but Abraham's offspring
right.
into the covenant?
Because Yahweh wanted Sarah to be
right.
the mother of the sacred seed.
Absolutely.
Right.
Because Sarah was a Shemite and
yeah.
Hagar was a Hamite,
yeah.
And it all boils down to what race they were.
That's exactly right. Exactly. Because the chosen seed, for in Isaac shall your seed be called. Now, let me just quickly ask everybody listening, have the Jews been called after the name of Isaac? No, they reject Isaac.
Absolutely.
The Jews, actually, they have no conviviality or heritage connecting them with Isaac at all.
And the only place they laugh is all the way to the bank.
That's right. they're laughing right now, but actually they're starting to cry because Madoff ripped off a few Jews. And now they're starting to go to the poorhouse. So when the Jews start going to the poorhouse, folks, you know the end is near. But this whole business about the elder son versus the younger son. And you pointed out a couple of episodes ago about the fact that Cain was older than Abel. Okay? So Cain should have been the rightful heir to the Adamic seed line.
Right.
Okay?
Evidently he was, because Satan has ruled the world, and Cain was told he would rule over Abel.
Now Seth came, you know, how many years later, we don't really know. Possibly even 100 years later. Well, so why was Seth given the inheritance and not Cain, with Cain being the older? What's the explanation?
Well, Cain was excluded by Adam.
Yeah, well, why?
Well, by Yahweh.
Yes, but why?
The only reason could be that he was not Adam's son.
That's right.
In reality.
It's right, because if he were Adam's son, Cain would be the lawful heir.
Right.
So these Judeo-Christians can't figure this out. It's too simple. Now we have another situation where here Ishmael is clearly the older brother of Isaac, okay? But why is Ishmael rejected? Because it's the wrong mother. In this case, last time it was the wrong father. This time it's the wrong mother.
Absolutely, because Hagar was a bondwoman.
That's right. That's right.
And therefore, it would be considered an illegitimate marriage.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, no, it wouldn't be an illegitimate marriage because, as long as the father is an Israelite.
Well, right. Well, racially, it would not be an illegitimate marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the rights of inheritance of
right.
the ancient kings, it would be considered an illegitimate marriage. And there would be an enmity between the two sons.
Okay, let's put it this way. Had Sarah not conceived and had Isaac, then Ishmael would have been the rightful son because there would not have been a 100% Shemitic son.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
But evidently it was Yahweh's plan to discriminate against Ham.
That's right. Yes, absolutely.
Ham was not to be the heir. And, and Hagar was of Ham.
And the Israelites, who are the covenant people, came through the Shemites, not through the Hamites.
Yes.
Okay.
So Yahweh discriminates not only against the non-Adamic races.
Yes.
But against people of the same race.
Yeah, because only the Israelites were predestined to be the covenant race. Or, the covenant tribes, put it that way, because, the Adamites, in my understanding of the marriage laws, and in fact, this has to be the case because the original 12 sons of Jacob had to take wives from outside of Israel because there was no tribes of Israel yet. Okay? The tribes of Israel came from the Israelites and their wives, who were non-Israelites.
Sometimes some of those wives where they're mentioned, I mean, people point accusing fingers,
mm-hmm.
but I believe that if the Bible doesn't, if Scripture doesn't set somebody out,
mm-hmm.
then that person probably doesn't merit being set out.
Right, exactly.
And the one case where a person was set out was Judah's Canaanite wife.
That's right, that's right. And, in fact, his offspring through that Canaanite wife, the one survivor, was Shelah, okay? And Shelah is not accredited with being an Israelite. He is outside the fold, and his descendants primarily, and probably more, but primarily became the Samaritans.
And he was the oldest and did not inherit the scepter.
Again, the oldest son who should have made the inheritance, but wasn't. Why? Because the genealogy was wrong.
Right.
That's
he wasn't
the
of the
reason.
Right race. He was an illegitimate child.
So how many times do we have to learn this lesson that Yahweh has a specific genealogy in mind when he has the offspring of the tribes of Israel?
And even Matthew goes out of the way in the genealogy of Christ when he mentions Tamar, because he does, and he says that she was the mother of Phares and Zerah. Zara gets a mention there,
mm-hmm.
because he's Phares's brother.
Right.
But so Shelah doesn't get any mention.
That's right. Because he's an illegitimate son. That's why.
There are all sorts of instances of discrimination in Scripture
mm-hmm.
for that reason.
That's right. That's right. So we have Cain being an illegitimate son. We have Ishmael being a somewhat illegitimate, okay, but not. With Isaac being better, okay, the genealogy of Isaac being better because he came through Sarah, and Shelah being utterly rejected because why? Because he's just like Cain, the wrong race, okay? And so I think we're fairly established here that not all races can be saved. Not all races can be grafted into the covenant race.
And they're not all chosen.
And they're not all chosen.
Even, like in Ishmael's case, if they practice the circumcision.
That's right.
And their father is Abraham.
Yes.
And he would rather have them.
Yeah. But Yahweh and Sarah knew better. Okay?
Right.
And this whole scenario is kind of repeated with Isaac and Rebekah, isn't it? Where,
right. And this is a message to any man. And I have met a lot of men in my lifetime who could not accept the identity message, not because it wasn't agreeable to their mind,
mm-hmm.
but because they had a son or a daughter or a grandson or a granddaughter who was a mamzer.
Mm-hmm.
And all they could think of is they couldn't bear to part with that mamzer.
Right.
But Abraham parted with this. He understood that he had to do it.
Yeah, and they cast Cain out of from among their presence too.
Absolutely.
Okay, so he had to go. Ishmael had to go, Cain had to go, Shelah had to go. It's pretty. That's discrimination, folks. Yahweh is a racist.
Yeah.
Racist.
Well, I mean, being God, he's the author of race.
He knows which people are capable of doing what and which people aren't capable of doing it.
Racism is actually the expression of love for the original creation
That's
of
right.
God.
Yeah, and this is not a message of hate, folks. We're just saying that if you need an electrician to solve an electrical problem, you don't hire a plumber or a carpenter, okay? There are specific races that have specific talents, and you can't pick a different race that hasn't got that talent. They won't be able to do the job.
Right. I'm not going to go swing on trees.
That's right. Okay? And the fact is that the black Africans never invented the wheel. They never had anything more than a one-story hut, okay?
That was a dung hut.
Yeah, right. Never built a two-story house in their whole existence. And they were as cannibals until the white man, you know, civilized them. And now that they're killing off the white man, they're going back to cannibalism. So all of these Judeo-Christian missionaries have accomplished absolutely nothing. Because the Bible says we're supposed to set a national example, which the rest of the world is to follow. We're not supposed to try and convert the heathen. We're not supposed to make them into Christians. Let
Absolutely
them be
not.
Whatever religion they want to be. We're not supposed to make Christians out of them.
No,
we're supposed
I
to
would
make
rather
Christians
have them
out
not
of ourselves.
I would rather have them be Muslims. I would rather have them be Hindus.
That's right.
That's where they belong. They don't belong with our God.
That's right. That's
and
right.
In fact, Judah's mixed marriage in Malachi, I think it might be 2:12 or 2:14, it says, Judah married the daughter of a strange god.
Mm.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, Paul, he attributes in Colossians chapter 2 all of the false religions to the fallen angels.
Right.
So here we have a triangle where we can demonstrate.
You mean the Baptists?
Where we can demonstrate that because the fallen angels are responsible for the false religions, they must be the strange gods.
Yes.
So Judah married the daughter of one of the fallen angels, and we go back to the Enoch story and see that the fallen angels had corrupted the original creation of God.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, Judah's wife must be one of the descendants of that corruption.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, a Canaanite woman, absolutely. And, you know, we're told that we're not to make marriages with the Canaanites. Even as late as the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, we are told not to make marriages with the Canaanites. So how in the world can, you know, where does the law change? We understand the law. Oh, the only change in the law from the Old Testament and New Testament is the abolition of the ritual sacrifices and the oblations.
Right, and this is where we're going next, is in the marriages of the Canaanites in Genesis 24.
Okay.
And Abraham was old and well-stricken in age, and Yahweh had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said unto his eldest servant of his house
mm-hmm.
that ruled over all that he had,
mm-hmm.
put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and I will make thee swear by Yahweh, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, thou shalt not take a wife unto my son, meaning Isaac,
mm-hmm.
of the daughters of the Canaanites,
right.
among whom I dwell.
Mm-hmm.
But thou shalt go unto my country, which is Paddan Aram,
mm-hmm.
and unto my kindred, and take a wife unto
yes.
my son Isaac.
So why did he specify kindred? You know, and now we've discovered in the previous cases of several elder sons being rejected because they're of the wrong kindred.
Right, and here we have Abraham the racist.
Mm-hmm.
He surely knew how important it was for Isaac to have a wife from the
right.
appropriate stock.
Because the covenants were made to a particular seed, not to a particular faith, not to a particular country, not to a particular territory. They were
well,
made
absolutely.
To a particular seed.
In fact, Ishmael the circumcised was kicked aside,
mm-hmm.
and Abraham is going, since the circumcision was only given to Abraham, those people back there in Abraham's country up in Paddan Aram, they're not practicing circumcision,
mm-hmm.
but Abraham wants one of their daughters for a wife for his
right,
son.
Right, because he wants the right seed to be, you know, the offspring of his son Isaac. Okay.
It's absolutely genetic.
It's
not
genetic.
By works or rituals, as
mm-hmm.
Paul says, and it's not by
yeah.
A profession of belief.
And both talents physical talents, mental talents, and morality are passed through the genes, folks. Scientific studies have proven this, that you can transmit immoral behavior from one generation to the next through genetics. Okay? This is not a, morality and behavior are not simply conditioned by the environment. Okay? And what's proven by this is the fact that within Rebecca's own womb, there are two manner of people clearly distinguished from one another by their moral fiber. Wouldn't that be correct to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are you ready to go there?
Yes. Genesis 25.
Okay.
Sarah died, and Abraham must have had a midlife crisis.
Okay.
Because again, he took a wife, and her name was Keturah.
Mm-hmm.
And she bare him Zimran and Jokshan and Medan and
right.
Midian and Ishbak and Shuah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of sons to have at 120 years
right.
old.
Right.
And Jokshan begat Sheber and Dedan, and the sons of Dedan were Ashurim and Letushim and Leumim, and the sons of Midian. Now this Midian is from whom several generations later, Moses takes a wife.
Mm-hmm.
From this particular Midian. And the son, who's the forebear of the Midianites.
Mm-hmm.
And the sons of Midian, Ephah and Epher and Hanok and Abidah and Eldah, and all these were the children of Keturah.
Yes.
And Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac.
Okay.
But
yes.
To the sons of the concubines, which Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts and sent them away.
Mm-hmm.
So here we see again that all of Abraham's other sons are excluded.
Yes. Yes.
Now, this is an exceptional thing in the ancient world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's contrary to custom, the sending off of Keturah's sons, because she's a wife who's living.
Mm-hmm.
Neither
right.
the wives... with Keturah good enough, the children that were born with Keturah were not good enough for Abraham's covenant.
Mm-hmm.
But it was common in the ancient world for children from competing wives
yes.
to compete over an inheritance.
Right.
And we saw this already with Sarah and Hagar.
Mm-hmm.
But Sarah's dead.
Yes.
And usually the living wife, if you read all the histories of all the Greek kings and the Roman kings, the living wife, the Persian kings, always gets, has the advantage.
Right, sure.
But here the living wife had no advantage.
Mm-hmm.
She was still sent off and her sons were sent off
because
right. Abraham knew that it had to go to Isaac.
Yeah, because Yahweh had decreed that it would be so. And therefore, both Hagar and Keturah and their offspring had to go in order to protect Isaac's inheritance.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Let me go back to Genesis chapter 4, because I want to stress that the covenants came through Rebekah, okay? Verse 58. And they called Rebekah and said to her, "Will you go with this man, the man that Abraham sent to Padan Aram to be a wife to Isaac?" And she said, "I will go." And they sent away Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, "You are our sister." Now listen to this, folks. "Be you the mother of thousands of millions, and let your seed possess the gate of those which hate them." Now this is the covenant, the promises that were given to Abraham, given to Sarah, given to Isaac, coming through Rebekah. It can't be any clearer, folks. Rebekah was Yahweh's choice, okay? Verse 61, "And Rebekah arose and her damsels, and they rode upon the camels and followed the man, and the servant took Rebekah and went his way. And Isaac came from away to well the Laharoi, for he dwelt in the south country, and Isaac went out to meditate in the field at the evening, and he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, the camels were coming, and Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and we saw Isaac, she lighted off the camel," and of course it was love at first sight. That's the way the storybook reads anyway. So here we have, Yahweh has a specific seed, and then he has specific individuals within that seed to carry on the covenants. And anybody who says that Yahweh is not discriminating. I mean, he's discriminating, as you said earlier, within our own race.
Absolutely.
He's discriminating. Okay? So it can't just be anybody. And so once the covenant seed is established through Jacob and his four wives, and I guess not all of them were exactly wives, but certainly all the sons were considered legitimate by Yahweh. So we have, again, it's a covenant of the seed line. There's simply no doubt about this. Okay, where do you want to go next?
Genesis chapter 25.
Okay.
And this is Rebekah and Isaac.
Okay.
And after these are the generations of Isaac, and these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begot Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to his wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister to Laban, the Syrian. And Isaac entreated Yahweh for his wife because she was barren.
Okay, verse 21, okay.
And Yahweh was entreated of him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived.
Okay.
And the children struggled together within her. Now, both of these children, Esau and Jacob, they're both Adamic. And there are some people in Christian identity, or two seed line, that swear that somehow the same thing that happened in Genesis 3 happened here.
Okay.
And somehow Esau was evil.
Right.
But there's no scriptural foundation for that whatsoever.
Right, yeah.
And the children struggled together within her, and she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of Yahweh, and Yahweh said unto her, two nations, or two goyim, actually,
yes,
are in thy womb, or two Gentiles are in thy womb,
yeah, if
and
you
two
follow
manner
Jewish
of
logic,
people
yeah.
shall be separated from thy bowels.
Yes.
And the one people shall be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the younger.
Okay, so now, first of all, two manner of people. So we're giving a clear indication that there's going to be a tremendous difference between Jacob and Esau.
Absolutely.
And there's no doubt about this. Yahweh told Rebekah, this is why you have to picture this, folks. They are they're duking it out with each other in the womb of Rebekah. And, you know, you can imagine what a woman might be going through to have twins and that they're fighting each other in her womb. It's astonishing. And this is why she was so worried, because that's why she had to inquire of Yahweh. What's going on within me, Yahweh? This is crazy, you know. And you know, because they were destined to be enemies. Absolutely destined to be enemies, just as Cain and Abel were destined to be enemies, and obviously the seed of Cain and the seed of Seth were destined to be enemies. It's just a continuation. Now, the difference here is that Esau became a race traitor. He joined with the other side.
Now we already see, and we're going to see it again soon, but we already see that Abraham had discriminated against the Canaanites.
Mm-hmm.
And Isaac and Rebekah and Jacob and Esau must have known that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know your grandfather's wishes.
Yes, right.
That's just natural. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
And there's no way that Esau could not have known that he should not have taken a wife from the Canaanites.
Absolutely.
Or the Hittites or any of the related people that had been cursed.
Yes, yes. Okay. We probably don't have to go through the entire scenario here concerning Jacob, getting the birthright, for the mess of pottage, okay? All I care to say about it is that the typical Judeo-Christian point of view on this is that Jacob was somehow a trickster and tricked Esau out of it. And that's not the case at all. Esau came out of the field hungry, and Jacob just said, well, sell me your birthright, okay? So if you come to my house and you have something that I want, then I say, sell it to me, and do I have to sell it to you?
Well, what I believe happened is that Jacob already saw that Esau was a race mixer.
Yes.
Already saw that Esau didn't deserve the birthright.
Mm-hmm.
Already knew deep down inside that he was going to end up with it. So Jacob was trying to find a way to get it legitimately.
Right.
Which is what he did.
Mm-hmm. Let me quote, I believe this is...
And in other words, Jacob can't be accused of stealing it.
Right.
Because he gained it legitimately.
It was a legitimate deal.
He can't be accused of getting something on the wayside because of the way he did it.
Yeah. Far be it from the Jews to complain about a fair deal, right?
Right. And a good one at that, a whole birthright for a bowl of soup.
They never did anything like that, folks. They never complained about a deal. Of course, we've always been the victims of their deals, okay? Now, let me go into the Book of Jubilees, because this confirms actually what you have just said. In the sixth week of this particular Jubilee, I believe it was Jubilee number 42, it says that Rebekah bore Isaac two sons, Jacob and Esau. But Jacob was pious and righteous, and Esau was a rough man, a tiller of the field and hairy, and Jacob dwelt in tents. And the youth grew, and Jacob learned writing, but Esau did not learn it, for he was a man of the field, and a hunter, and learned war, and all rough deeds. And rough, you could mean, immoral, okay? But Abraham loved Jacob, but Isaac loved Esau. So we're being told in Jubilee that Abraham understood that Jacob would be better than Esau, okay? And Abraham saw the deeds of Esau, and he knew that his name and seed should be called for him in Jacob. And he recalled Rebekah and commanded her concerning Jacob. For he saw that she too loved Jacob much more than Esau. And he said to her, "My daughter, watch my son Jacob, for he shall be in my stead upon the earth as a blessing among the sons of men," which means Adamites, folks, "and to all the seed of Shem, and for an honor, and I know that the Lord has chosen for him himself as a people, secluded from all those upon the face of the earth. And behold, Isaac my son loves Esau more than Jacob. Add yet to do something good for him, and let thine eyes be over him as the beloved," meaning Jacob. So Abraham preferred Jacob over Esau as well. Okay,
absolutely.
The Bible does not tell us that, but the Book of Jubilees does.
Well, it's evident that Esau was a race mixer.
That's right.
and he would be shunned.
Yes.
He would be shunned for that.
Yeah, okay.
And the bowl of pot, the sale of the bowl of pottage only was only a ceremony officiating Esau's loss of the birthright.
Right, and that occurs in Genesis 25:34. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Okay, how you can call Jacob a trickster at this point is beyond me. And even when you get into the story of where he impersonates Esau, it wasn't Jacob's idea. It was Rebekah's idea. And obviously Abraham approved.
Well, obviously, Yahweh hated, and Paul explains it in Romans 9,
mm-hmm.
and it's in Malachi, and in the prophet, and Yahweh hated Esau from the womb.
That's right.
and this is not a discrimination. It's really not a hatred for, it's not a personal thing, but all of us have already been created in the mind of Yahweh millions of years ago.
Uh-huh.
And even though we have free will. I mean, you decide to do right or to do wrong.
Yeah.
But God, being God, can't help but know the course that you're going to take.
Yes, it's
long
a prophecy.
Before you take it.
It's a prophecy. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because he reads us like a book.
Well,
he knows what we're capable of and what we're not capable of.
He wrote the book.
That's right.
And he knew before Esau was born that Esau was going to be a race mixer.
And in Verification chapter 26, verses 34 and 35, "And Esau was 40 years old when he took as a wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite, which were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah." Now, why would it be a grief of mind? Now, if you're not astute and haven't been reading carefully as to the fact that Yahweh discriminates between Israelites and Canaanites, then you can't understand. Isn't Esau making a covenant with the Canaanites, which is forbidden?
Absolutely. And Rebecca said, and it's recorded in Genesis 27:46. And Rebecca said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth.
Right.
They're the Hittites.
That's the Hittites.
If
yes.
Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me?
Yes. Oh, my God. I can't even bear the thought of Jacob taking a wife from these Hittites.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes.
And notice how she didn't mention Esau there.
Right. Well, but the next verse does. Chapter 28, verse 1. And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, you shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Okay? In other words, you shall not do as your brother Esau did.
Absolutely. And even though Esau, it's not, his wives aren't mentioned until Genesis chapter 36,
mm-hmm.
we have to understand that this had to be going on for a while.
Yes. Yes. Well, here, and I got one more quote from Jubilees before we leave off Genesis here tonight. Let me jump to verse 8 of chapter 28. And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father, then went Esau to Ishmael and took the wives which he had, Maleth, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth, to be his wife. So here he was trying to, you know, backwards please Abraham and Isaac and Rebekah, of course, but he still didn't marry within the Shemitic branch, did he?
Right. He just didn't take one. He didn't take one legitimate wife.
That's right.
And that probably saved a couple of good women.
Right.
And a little side note: this Nebaioth that's mentioned here is probably the father of the Nabataean Arabs.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Very good. Very good. And so, yeah, so let me jump to, I believe, let me have my note here, where in the book of Jubilees, Jacob, he actually swears that he will follow the instructions of his parents, okay? And there was a point where Isaac and Rebekah were having a conversation, and Isaac admits to Rebekah that he did love Esau more than Jacob. But he says to her, the reason for that was because he was the elder son. Okay? Let me, here it is. Jubilees chapter 35, verses 17. And Isaac said to her, I know and I see the deeds of Jacob with us, that with all his heart he honors us. But I loved Esau formerly more than Jacob on account of his birth. Because he was the firstborn, wasn't he? But now
and there's the venison, and Esau
was
the hunter,
and
fathers tend to favor the more masculine of their sons.
And, yeah, and he was thinking about a stomach.
Of course.
that tasty, juicy venison, right? But now, listen, folks, but now I love Jacob more than Esau, because he has increased in evil doing, that is Esau, and there is no righteousness in him. For all his ways are injustice and violence, and there is no righteousness in him at all. And now my heart trembles concerning all his deeds, and neither he nor his seed shall abide, for they shall be destroyed from the earth, and they shall be rooted out from under heaven. For he has deserted the God of Abraham, and goes after his women, after uncleanness, and after error, he and his children.
And that's basically the message of the book of Obadiah.
Yeah, exactly. It's all consistent. Jubilees gives us a few more details that Moses left out in Genesis. Okay? But all these details totally verify the two seed line position and the fact that here, now we've got four different sons, four different pairs of sons, and in each case, the elder was rejected for the younger. Why? Because the elder was conceived illegitimately. Or, in this case, the case of Esau, he himself bore illegitimate children. Okay? Bore the wrong kind of children. So, in each case, the elder son had done something wrong or was born of an illegitimate seed. So, but rightfully, the elder son should have gotten the inheritance according to the law.
Right. And the next one is Reuben, but that's a different story.
Right. Right. Yeah, and then so we have ordinarily primogenesis would always go to the elder son, but because of the defects of the elder sons in every case, Yahweh rejected the elder son and chose the younger son for very specific racial reasons. And of course, in the case of Esau, and of course, with the race also comes a moral aptitude. Okay. And none of the rejected sons had the moral aptitude.
No, they all screwed up. They were all moral screw-ups.
That's right.
Every one of them.
As Abraham told Rebekah, this guy Esau is a screw-up. We got to get rid of him. You got to favor Jacob at every cost because Esau's evil. I can see it.
Esau is the example to us today that even though you have perfect genes,
mm-hmm.
you also have to make the right choices in life,
yes.
and prove and have your works display your genetics.
Right.
I mean, one has to follow the other, and we make choices, and our genes aren't going to get us off the hook
right.
when those choices are wrong.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you're saying that because so many critics of CI, especially two seed line doctrine, say, well, you're saying that you can't. You know, you can't be a good person unless you're white. No, we're not saying that at all. Okay? There's too many of our people that, aren't qualifying. That's the problem. There are too many white people.
There's lots of people today that are forsaking their birthright.
That's right.
And that's been a fact all down through history.
Right. And they're practicing immorality left and right. Why?
And their souls, their spirits, those consciousness, they will be with us in the afterlife, but it won't be very pleasant for them when they have to face up to what they've done.
That's right. Well, because Yahshua says in the parable of the wheat and the tares that those who join up with the tares, who are too close to the tares, will be cut and burned, bundled and burned with them.
So honor her, my people, lest you suffer her punishment.
That's right. So our people have to pay attention. Race doesn't get you into heaven, folks. That's just the beginning. You have to practice. You have to accept the grace of Yahshua at the cross and start acting accordingly.
Well, okay? Right. Your works are tried in the fire. And if there's nothing left, you have no reward.
That's right. I mean, in other words, you can become so much like a Jew, even though you're an Adamite, that you will not gain salvation. You just won't get it. Now, maybe in the afterlife, maybe after the judgment day, there will be, I don't know. That's probably a question for another study. But certainly, they're not going to be rewarded for anything they've done in this life. I mean, positively rewarded, They will certainly be punished in whatever way Yahweh sees fit. Okay? So I think, this message is absolutely clear, Oh, yeah, and then also additionally, because I always get the question, well, what happens to the other races, okay? And in my opinion, since we're supposed to set a national example, we're not supposed to go out and try to convert blacks, Latinos, and, Chinamen one-on-one. We are supposed to set a national example. It's the city on the hill. It's not the preacher on the hill, folks. It's the city on the hill. We're supposed to set a national example. And indeed, when America was great, this country became the most prosperous nation on the face of the earth in 100 years by being a Christian nation, okay, and by protecting that nation. And we were not committing race mixing in any way, shape, or form, and this was a moral nation at the time. I think it was the French traveler who wrote a travelogue about America, and he said that America was great because America was good. All right, we were obeying Yahweh's law, and our prosperity reflected that.
I know his name, and I'm trying to remember his name.
I can't think of his name.
I can't spit it out.
Yeah, maybe somebody in the forum can remember. But, then we had the Federal Reserve Act, and then everything started to go downhill.
Everything's downhill from there.
That's right. Absolutely downhill from there. Because why? We started practicing usury, which is a Jewish, practice.
Well, we also gave them control over our entire economy and gave them the means by which to purchase our media and our educational establishments and much of our institutions, our Western institutions are now controlled by them.
Yeah, and
museum boards, art boards, whatever, everywhere you look.
They've stolen our educational system, introduced feminism and homosexuality and Judeo-Christianity and all the junk.
The entire cultural revolution.
Exactly. The cultural revolution started in 1913.
And if anybody doesn't want to believe that the Jews have actually, all of those movements are actually part of a war against Christendom, just read Allen Ginsberg's Howl, because he announces it.
Right, right. And numerous Jews have said it, you know, and any Jew, and many Jews, even Arthur Koestler, Alfred Lilienthal, Benjamin Friedman, many Jews have tried to warn Christians that Judaism is a religion of the devil and is intent on destroying the Christian world.
Right. Craig Blackwood, I could credit with this. I get some of his mailings. A pair of radical Jewish Columbia University professors by the name of Richard Cloward and Francis Piven wrote an article in the magazine known as The Nation. The article was published on May 2nd, 1966, and laid out what is known as the Cloward-Piven strategy. The plan calls for the destruction of capitalism in America by swelling the welfare rolls to the point of collapsing our economy and then implementing socialism by nationalizing many private institutions. Cloward and Piven studied Saul Alinsky just like Hillary Clinton and Obama did.
That's right.
Listen, as Brandon House and his guest, and I guess this was on a program which Craig Blackwood pointed out, but this is, the Jewish conspiracy against Christendom has been going on behind the scenes and playing out in the open.
Yeah.
But even when it's published in The Nation, the only people that read that are their fans.
That's right. Yeah, and the Judeo-Christians of the world, no matter how much evidence you put right in front of them, they refuse to look at it. Because they're so brainwashed and so totally convinced that the Jews are Israel, we must bless the Jews. And like at the speech I gave in Russellville, Alabama, you know, I asked those people, what kind of blessing have we gotten in return from, you know, supporting the state of Israel for the last 60 years? Absolutely none.
Nothing but
curses.
Because we've made deals with the devil. And every time we make a deal with the devil, we get cursed.
That's right.
And
that's right.
The more we help the Jews, the more we will get punished.
That's right.
And from a basic Christian standpoint, without knowing anything about conspiratorial history, without knowing anything about two seed line, I wrote a paper, it's on my website, Should Christians Embrace the Jews? And just from the standpoint of the gospel, the answer is a resounding no.
No, absolutely
and if
not.
Christians would only believe the gospel,
yes,
you could cast aside all the knowledge about Genesis 3, all the knowledge about two seed line, all the knowledge about conspiratorial history, everything they've done to us for 2,000 years, throw all that out the window, just believe the gospel, and that will keep you away from the Jews, and that would keep us a free and Christian people.
That's right, because we're supposed to be separate from the other races, as the Bible clearly instructs us. And
separate from the Christ deniers.
That's right.
Because it's not the Holocaust deniers that are a danger to civilization. It's the Christ deniers that are a danger to civilization.
Right. And most Christians are Christ deniers without realizing it, because they put the interest of the Jews before the interest of Christ.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's simply no denying this, folks. The prophecy of Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, the Great Delusion, and other prophecies clearly spell out the fact that the Christian world will be in a state of rebellion and confusion and delusion and denial of what the scriptures actually teach. And it's the Church of Laodicea.
The self-righteous people.
The self-righteous people who think they know better than Yahweh.
exactly what they are.
That's what they are. And they're commonly known as Judeo-Christians. So, you know, this message is undeniable, and I was just really gratified, you know, when I was on with Rick Adams last Wednesday. All the callers were just very much in support of what I had to say about the line of Esau, Edom being the Jews and the destroyers of the world and destroyers of civilization.
I listened to that program, and well, Keith found you again.
Right.
Rick Adams actually surprised me.
Yeah.
He's two-seat line, practically.
Yeah, I was surprised, too. He's the one who brought up the subject of race. I wasn't actually going to go there.
I was very, very surprised and very, very pleased. And I thought I was listening to one of our programs.
That's right.
I was very, very shocked.
Yeah. So
and all of the callers were good.
That's right. Not one Catholic.
Well, except Keith did throw a few jabs in there for the King James.
Right. But even
I'll
there,
never understand. But.
Yeah. Even there, he was right. If you understand the actual meaning of the Hebrew and Greek words, then you can't misinterpret those particular passages of the King James Version. You know,
well,
about,
right, and that works for the words like Gentile and
yeah,
Jew, and,
right,
and that will get you by, but there are still a lot of other mistranslations in the King James that are very I put out a mailing the other night on 1 Corinthians 16:22,
mm-hmm,
and what that should really say.
Yes.
If anyone who does not, love Yahshua Christ, he must be accursed, a rebel to be destroyed.
That's right.
Is what that says,
mm-hmm,
and I can demonstrate that from the Hebrew.
Yeah.
But every single translation translates it, let him be accursed, O Lord, come. Get out of here. Paul's not changing the subject.
Oh, man, let me slap that guy. Yeah, what we're dealing with here is blatant false translations. You know, and you know, it stems from the Jewish Masoretic text, which, you know, prompted us to forget the name of Yahweh and Yahshua. And then the Catholics messed with the New Testament big time, you know. And the passage you just pointed out and the reversal of subjects and, you know, verbs and objects in sentences.
And
you know,
the missing of rhetorical questions.
Yes.
There's a lot of devices by which the King James is very, very poorly translated.
Mm-hmm. And I believe deliberately so, not necessarily by the King James translators necessarily, but following their Catholic influence, okay? Because King James was actually a Catholic, all right? And so his translators were not in the business of trying to refute Catholicism.
Well, that's why the Stuarts were run off the throne by Cromwell.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were Catholic sympathizers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's not true that, you know, King James, and actually in my opinion, and, you know, from gleaning the comments of other writers, is that the reason that King James had the authorized version commissioned was he wanted to lessen the condemnations of kings who aren't serving the people. He wanted to be a dictator. That's my understanding of why he had the King James Version commissioned. Okay.
Well, there are several, I've heard several theories on that, and I have not studied the period well enough to be mm-hmm. able to make a decision on any of them.
Right. Some people
However,
say
it's absolutely evident, and I talked to Owen Paulwa, you know, when I did last Sunday's program,
uh-huh.
and you know, we were talking about the King James and how it's such an English tradition.
Yes.
And I don't think he really understood about the Geneva Bible.
Oh, okay.
And I explained to him that when my Puritan ancestors stepped off their little boats in Massachusetts,
yes,
and their Bible was the Geneva Bible. It was yes. not the King James Bible.
Right, 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 yeah. And that was a Protestant Bible.
Absolutely.
The Geneva Bible was a strictly Protestant Bible. Yes, yeah. So there was a great dispute, you know, as everybody knows, between the Protestants and the Catholics. And
right, but it just, you know, a lot of people want to think that the King James is the original Bible of the English language, and
mm-hmm.
it's not.
It's
the
not.
Geneva Bible was.
Right, right. And actually, Tyndale, I can't remember, I think he
right, Tyndale was a couple of hundred years before the King James. And,
right.
And I think he only had a New Testament, though, didn't he?
Yeah, I think it was only the Old Testament, now that I think of it. Because he did say, Tyndale did say, that the Hebrew agreeth so much with the English
Oh, yeah, okay, that's right.
That
okay.
All I have to do is substitute the English words for the Hebrew words, and the sentences make perfect sense.
Okay, well, I didn't believe it was a complete Bible.
It wasn't. It wasn't a complete Bible. I think he was burned at the stake before he was able to get to the New Testament. Right. Which, you know, considering the teachings in Judeo-Christianity today, that you should not become political, and you should not object to what's going on politically in the world today. And you look at the example of all the Protestants on the planet before this current Laodicean church.
Right, and Christians should absolutely be political.
That's right.
And they should absolutely make every political decision through the lens of the gospel of Christ and their religion. And it's absurd. It's a crime to take.
Yeah.
To take one's religion out of one's politics.
Right. And, you know, where did the Bible change so that these modern Judeo-Christians get the exact opposite meaning out of these verses from the saints? You know, what changed? They obviously didn't have this perspective that you should be apolitical or that you shouldn't offend people with your Christianity.
And I chastised the British Israel people on last Sunday, because they stood by and did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Free-spokenness, parousia, is free-spokenness. Mm-hmm. It's what the Greeks considered the freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Greek ideal, parousia.
Right, it's an Israelite
ideal.
And
they overthrew tyrants so that they could have freedom of speech in Greece.
Yeah.
In Corinth and Sparta and Athens.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a struggle long fought for in the ancient Greek world.
Yes.
And an ideal that was upheld by Romans and Greeks everywhere. And we lost it in Europe, and especially in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And the British Israel World Federation just stood by and watched that happen.
That's right.
And went and played golf and chased foxes.
That's right, and got old.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I understand they're not making any new converts, you know, because it's become stale.
Right, it's become stale because every lukewarm sellout sect becomes stale.
That's right. I hope the British Israel World Federation is listening.
Well, I really don't even care about that anymore because, you know, as I said last week, I would try to approach the Canadian British Israel World Federation,
mm-hmm.
but its front man is a Jew.
Right.
It's incredible.
Well, I mean, who's the man that does their videos? He's an Arab.
Well, that's who I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Whether he's an Arab or a Jew, it doesn't matter.
Oh,
to
the
Jew. He's a Canaanite.
Yeah. He's not an Israelite.
Peter Salimi.
Salimi. Yeah.
He's not a
Salimi.
Saxon.
Is their spokesperson now for Canadian British Israel, and he's not even an Israelite. Folks.
Right, they post articles, as Russ just said, they post articles in the British Ensign Messenger from Yair Davidi and from other Jews. And
so for two centuries of teaching the Anglo-Saxon truth, now it's being taught by either an Arab or a Jew who's not even an Anglo-Saxon.
Right, and it's incredible.
It's amazing. It's utterly amazing. So we have to be near the end times because we can't get this corrupt. We can't get much more corrupt than this, put it that way, before Yahshua returns. All right. Okay. Well, Bill, I'm glad you could fill in for me again. I will do my best to find out what's wrong with my connectivity here. And I will call, I'll call who I have to call to get this thing going again, you know, because it seems to be only my computer and nobody else's, you know. So my ability to connect to TalkShoe. So I may have made someone angry. someone in the Antichrist conspiracy. And, you know, if that's the case, I'll try to find out who it is. You know, I'll find out one way or another, okay?
Okay.
So I thank you very much for hosting the show again this evening. And I look forward to doing the show tomorrow night. Be ready to host it again, okay?
Probably. It seems that way. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. All right. Y'all bless. God bless everybody.
Good night.
Good night.